Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
When I get nervous, I keep talking.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood. I try to lean in a little bit when the questions do come up. With Margaret Aples
and Amy Wilson.
How does the baby get out of your stomach?
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to. Any follow-ups? No? All right, we're done for now. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And this week, we're talking about the birds and the bees.
We had to get here eventually, didn't we, Amy?
We put it off for 87 episodes. See?
You guys, we're 87 episodes old, and it's time we had the talk.
We're old enough now.
We're mature. We think at 87, you can handle it. Everyone have a seat.
God, I mean, it's just us and I'm still uncomfortable.
So before we start, we're going to have a disclosure for this episode. Is disclosure the word I'm looking for?
I know what you mean.
Disclaimer,
right.
That this is probably not, we're going to be discussing the birds and the bees. And you probably don't want your children learning about the birds and the bees from our podcast.
No.
This may be one you don't want to listen to with your children. We love it when everybody listens to the podcast with their kids, but this one maybe not so much.
We don't want to spoil anybody's innocence, which is, I think this is like, why is this a thing? You know, I always like to start with that.
Well, maybe, Amy, if the episode goes awesome, people can just not have to have the talk anymore. They can just put the podcast on and run away and leave their kids listening to the podcast.
Well, we're not going to explain it. We're going to talk about it.
Talking about it. All right.
We're going to
maybe offer that service later date. Here's the talk. Just put it on and then run away.
But this is so hard, I think, because we are worrying. We worry about having the talk too soon, which I think we're not. We think we are. And the flip side of that is that so we're spoiling their innocence, which we've worked so hard to protect. And we also are engaging with our children no longer being innocent, which is very hard for us to, also very hard for us to accept, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's a challenging thing. I have kids who are 10, 8, and 6. So I'm right in like the spot for this. Like the fifth graders are talking about sex constantly. And my first grader is pretty naive about everything. So it's like I'm really straddling the line.
You're right in it. Like you do need to talk to your kids about this stuff lest they talk to fifth grade me about this stuff. I don't know why. I was an early reader. I honestly think maybe that's what it was. So like I had the whole Judy Blume canon, you know, memorized by my first communion, right? So my fifth grade, I was just world weary, or thought I was. And I enjoyed taking my friends to like this, there was this church that was around the corner from us that had a fire escape that went up the side of the church, like to a second floor.
You were basically in the movie Annie, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it was a nice spot for an uninterrupted conversation. So I'd go with one friend or another up the side of this fire escape and we'd dangle our knees off the side. And then I would tell them the facts of life.
That is very upsetting.
And I mean, I was definitely like markedly incorrect, yes, about many of the particulars
many. But that didn't stop me from just making sure that everybody knew what I had to tell them. And I think like that's what we have to remember for the fifth graders. That's their alternative, is their friends.
Well, and I'm going to say right up front that the idea of the talk is the one of the biggest misconceptions about this whole thing. Like, yes, you're not going to have a talk and sort this all out in one conversation. And then like, phew, we never have to talk about this again.
Yes.
And I will give you an example of that, which is that my brother-in-law sat his kids down. Something came up and he was like, no, now it's time to have the talk. And he went through all the particulars using the correct words, ran it all through. And then like, maybe a month later, his seven-year-old came back and was like, wait, so you and mom did that twice because they have two kids? And he's like, no, we did it a bunch of times because it feels good, but we just had two kids as a result. And then his son was like, I just don't understand how rubbing your butts together could feel good. And he's like, oh, okay, it looks like we got to do that talk again. Like, whatever went through, you have to realize that like when you're talking to this stuff about this, when you're talking about this stuff to your kids, their sensory overload is like so complete that they may not be able to process it. We recently did our live show and we called some moms up on stage. And when we practice with the lights, and the lights are extremely bright. And when we called the moms up on stage, all of them were like, oh my God, it's so bright. Like they couldn't even play the game because they were so sensory overloaded by being in the bright lights in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
And so that's the sensation that your kids are having when you're talking to them about sex.
I think you're right. The Center for Young Women's Health at Boston Children's Hospital said the most important part of this is, yes, that this isn't one conversation. This is an ongoing conversation, and that you have to make yourself an askable parent. So when you have a conversation about some aspect of this, that's the most important thing you get across. I am an askable parent. This is okay to talk about, so that you'll have the next conversation and the next one and the next one.
I think that's true. I think, is this a controversial or perhaps even incorrect statement? I'm just going to throw this out here anyway. I worry more as we talk about things that like we're over-talkable in some ways. You know what I mean? Like I think sex and everything that goes along with it is a bit of a taboo subject for kids. I think you should be askable and I think you should be available, but they're still going to talk about it some with their friends. They're still going to get wrong information. Like, don't get to the point where you're like, I'm everything, mom. Like, you're not going to be their everything when it comes to this conversation, nor should you be. Does that make sense?
Yes, but it also, it isn't, you have to have it. Like
you have to have it, but I see more among people I know the overcorrection from like maybe my parents never talked to me about this stuff. I'm not saying my own parents, but like to I'm going to be this complete open book. Like you're not going to fill in every gap in this thing for your kids, but you want to be very open and very, I love the term askable. I think that's right on.
Right. The askable parent. There was, I wanted to prove to myself that this needed to, that we do need to do this, right? That this is a thing that really does need to occur, that our kids aren't just figuring it out. And of course we've just explained why they're going to get inaccurate information elsewhere. But the studies have shown, I got a study for you.
Of course you do.
Dr. Colleen DiIorio published a study in the Journal of Adolescent Health, and she talked to teenagers and she talked to parents about who's talking about what and when. Not necessarily teenagers, she said adolescents, which I guess could be a little bit younger. But adolescents, the more they talked about this stuff, specifically with their mothers, the less likely they were to have initiated in sexual intercourse yet. So... Huh. And when parents, she also found that when parents were the main source of information, their behaviors were not only going to be a little bit delayed, but were also going to be significantly less risky than if they hadn't had parental discussions or if they had very minor parental discussions. So I know it's hard for all of us to wrap our heads around, and I had to like sort of like read this twice, but if you want your kids to delay being sexually active until a time when it's more appropriate for them and to be safe about it once they start, then you have to talk to them about it. It is sort of, you think like, you know, no, I want to protect them from it and make sure that they know it's not happening. But it would seem that that's not the way to go about it.
Yeah, I think that makes a tremendous amount of sense. And I also think it talking about it gives you the opportunity to give voice to your values around this topic, whatever those values happen to be. Like, I think, you know, we talk a lot about like children do what they see. They replicate kind of the values of your household that are given to them by osmosis, like the way you prioritize stuff, the way you treat each other, all of that good stuff. With sexual activity, you're not really modeling that interaction as much because you're in a very different phase of your life. You know, I mean, you may be if you're a dating parent, but for people who are married, like you're married and like that whole part of your life of like engaging with sex and other people, it seems like a distant memory. So you kind of have to talk about your values around this and you have to talk about your expectations around it. And you have to have these conversations.
I think broadening it, you're right. And the Center for Women's Health made the same point. They said that this is a much larger topic than sort of, you know, what part goes where. You talk about
right.
gender, sexual orientation, relationships, how to be in one, how to treat somebody well, that it's a much larger conversation. And it seems to me that sort of including that stuff, broadening the parameters of what a discussion about sex and relationships can be about also makes it easier. Like, oh, I can talk to you all day about how to be in a relationship and the sexual orientation and stuff like that. I'm much more comfortable with that than mechanical discussions. And so fine. So include those things, that those are also good things to be askable about. And they're also things that our kids need to learn to navigate.
I will also say that I find raising a girl and two boys, that a lot of conversations around non-sexual things are part of kind of the sex talk. Like we talk a lot about respecting people's space, consent, whether or not someone is participating with the thing that you want to be doing. Like those kind of conversations and the way that you play with respect kind of fuels this whole overarching picture around relationships, consent, how you engage with people. And that's why like the whole idea of like the sex talk and you're going to do it for 20 minutes and you're done. Like how you treat people in relations to each other, it's all part of the talk and that has to be ongoing all the time in your house.
So it seems to me if this is something that's uncomfortable for you, which I think applies to 100% of people listening or talking right now, then these are good icebreakers. These are good ways to approach it. Besides, what questions do you have about, you know, condoms? You can ease into it by talking in a more general way about loving relationships and what they should and shouldn't entail. I saw something,
but it doesn't get you off the hook for the mechanics.
No,
either.
No, it doesn't. And I found something really interesting when I was researching this episode. I was using my teenager's computer, one of my teenager's computers, because mine was in a room where my husband was still sleeping. And as I was trying to research this episode, the topics I was trying to research kept getting blocked by the parental protections that I had put in place, the parental control
Funny.
Settings, internet gatekeepers. So there's an article on Mashable. I'll put the link up on whatfreshhellpodcast.com. It's an issue. I mean, yes, I'm glad that there are parental controls and internet settings you can put in place. I think it was safe settings on Google that was happening here. But I was trying to look up educational things and it was blocking all of them. So the problem is, first of all, our kids, you know, everything's porn. But also when we try to protect them from that, our kids also can't look up the stuff that's like actually really helpful. And there's some amazing stuff on the internet. We can talk about that later. What are the useful resources, but they're hard for our kids to find because we're throwing out the baby with the bathwater. So that's another reason we have to have this conversation with them, because it's hard. It's hard for them to find the information that's useful.
I mean, I think the number one reason we have to have this conversation with them is because of the other option. The other option is Amy Wilson on the fire escape being like, let me tell you a couple, three things.
And that was then. That was then. Now, I mean, I don't have to lay out for you what they can get on their phone within 60 seconds, because that stuff somehow gets around the parental settings. It's the .org stuff that doesn't. And there's just, you know, my son was looking, I have a Lululemon shopping bag in our front hall to, you know, with some stuff I got to take to school. And it says like right on the Lululemon shopping bag and like in a curly font, it's like, have sex and eat tacos. And he's like, ugh. Mom, look at this bag. Like, why is that on a shopping bag? That's like, ugh. I'm so skeeved out by that. And I'm going to throw out that shopping bag. But that, like, before 8 a.m., my teenager was embarrassed that I'm walking around with a shopping bag that says have sex on it that I didn't even notice. But like, yeah, really, Lululemon? Like, it's like, you sell yoga clothes. Like, I don't want that. I'm, of course, walking around in New York City, every bus shelter, every, you know, the sexualization of culture is rather present for our kids all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, even shopping for my daughter, it's like every shirt is like a half shirt that says like, I will spend your money on it. And it's like, wait, what? I don't want my daughter wearing this. And, you know, finding the balance for her between like, wear what you're comfortable in, live in your skin, it's fine. But also, like, you have to go back upstairs. You're not actually covering your basic body parts with clothing. It's complicated. It's deep. I think we got to get into some solutions, Amy.
All right. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll talk how to get started.
Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby, who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed. Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. Margaret, I've been at the research again, looking into metabolic health and, more importantly, metabolic flexibility, which turns out is the key to improved energy levels, better sleep, better fitness, all the things. And I found out about all this because we got a chance to try Lumen, the first handheld device that helps you manage your metabolic health.
Lumen works when you breathe into it. If you do that first thing in the morning or after a workout, Lumen measures your metabolism by measuring the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. It's science, people. That lets you see exactly what's going on in your body in real time.
Then you use Lumen's app to get tailored guidance to improve your sleep, your nutrition, even stress management. If you're interested in figuring out the effects of different sorts of foods on your body, Lumen is a really cool way to see what's actually happening as your body burns different fuel sources.
If you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fresh to get $100 off your Lumen.
That is lumen.me, lumen.me, and use the code Fresh at checkout for $100 off.
Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, I want us to focus, Amy. Part of this is my fault. I'm like, but theoretically, let's focus.
Okay, so experts say that the easiest way to start this conversation is from a very early age, from learning to talk. Your children should be taught the correct names for body parts instead of that's your boopy and your bippy. Because
what's the law? I mean, I hear that all the time, and I guess it seems to make sense. But what's the logic behind that?
The logic behind that is that this is the names for things. We're not embarrassed by the real names for things. We're not embarrassed by these body parts. They don't get special treatment. Their names are their names. And so that then when you take the extra step later, like, and here's what these parts of your body do and can do, we're not ashamed. And this is a big, this is sort of a Rubicon, right? I mean, I have done that with my kids. And it's funny, like when, you know, older people, their grandparents, an older babysitter or something has to engage with that, they're like, you know, it's it leads to some uncomfortable moments where like when they're bathing and, you know, and they're like, I washed my, you know, whatever. I don't want to get bleeped by Apple Podcasts for having an explicit podcast. But see, these are dirty words and they name our body parts, and just and giving just those things special names, I think, highlights to our kids like there's something really weird and shameful about just secret. This part of
okay,
me.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I mean, I do it anyway because I've always heard that, but I'm down with it.
Yeah, it makes sense. And then I sort of my next question is, what do you do like with very young kids? Do you kind of wait for them to have a question? I think you do. Like, I don't think you need, with a preschooler or even like a first or second grader, you need to be sort of like, okay, we need to start talking about bodily autonomy. There are those who would disagree with me. But I yeah, think, what do you think?
I think bodily autonomy can get very intellectual, and it is the kind of thing of like, hey, that person is tickling you. You don't want to. If someone is doing something that you don't want, tell them no and go find a grown-up and I will put a stop to it. Like, those kind of conversations are kind of about sex, consent maybe, but those kind of skills you're building from the time they're very, very young. But when it comes to actually like discussions of body parts, I think that's, yeah, you use the right name for stuff. You're in the tub. People, you know, I have boys and girls. They learn pretty early. People have different parts. But yeah, I don't think you sit down and you're like, today, bodily autonomy. I don't see it.
And we've talked in the past about how when they ask a question, say like, where do babies come from, right? If your four-year-old asks that, it's okay to start by saying, well, what do you know? Well, what have you heard, right? And sort of suss out what they're wondering about so that you answer the question that is being asked and not a lot of questions that aren't being asked.
That's a big touchstone for us. And I love it for this discussion. Answer the question you are asked. You talk a lot about like turning the question around, which I think is smart. Like, well, what do you know? And I also think it's fine to like, where do babies come from? Well, the dad puts the baby in the mom and then the mom has the baby. Mm-hmm. Like, go with rudimentary steps. How does that happen? Well, the dad has a penis. Like, you just answer the next question in the step, because they tend to question you about what they're ready for. And I think the only problem is sometimes people are like, okay, here it is. And then you get diagrams out and it's like, whoa, I just meant like, where do babies come from? Like the stork or not, you know?
I have a much younger brother, as I've discussed sometimes. He's 19 years younger than me. And he asked me, I think he was probably 12 and I was 31.
Did you take him out to the fire escape, baby?
Yes.
Come on, kid.
Pretty much.
I'm glad you asked. Let's go out to the fire escape.
I mean, I was kind of like a cool aunt to him as much as a sister. And he asked me what AIDS was. Okay, so this is a long time ago. He asked me what AIDS was. And then he also asked me what a condom was. And he must have been younger than 12. I was definitely like a grown up out of college, but not a parent yet. And I way over answered this kid.
Right.
And
right. That it's the over answer that we want to beware of.
And the words were like it was coming out of my mouth. And I was like, okay, now I have to explain this whole other thing.
I'm at the Stonewall Inn. Like, what am I doing here? I don't know.
I way, you know, took it way bigger. And these are big questions. And that's when I get nervous, I keep talking. And probably this is one where you need to be very, very cautious, because I definitely blew this kid's mind. And then as you were saying before, he's like on stage with the lights in his eyes and he is not hearing anything I'm saying anyway. So it was okay for me to say a little bit less.
Yeah, I think that's a really good takeaway. It's like, answer the question you're asked and don't get nervous and be like, okay, I've been waiting for this. Here we go. And just sometimes it's just a question of like, where do babies come from? Dad puts the baby in mom and then mom has the baby. Okay. Any follow-ups? No? All right, we're done for now. You know, we'll revisit this for sure.
When my kids were little, I remember like my boys were like 4 and 2. And I remember the four-year-old asking me, you know, like in front of the two-year-old, how does the baby get out of your stomach? I guess I was pregnant with their sister. And I just said, well, the doctor helps. The doctor helps the mom. And again, I got like 6 months out of that, you know, and then when they asked again, then I was more ready. Then I said, well, there's this book we can look at together and I'll show you. And I think it's okay to punt rather than over-answer.
Unless you're punting all the time.
Unless
it's okay
you're
to
punting
punt
all the time.
Momentarily.
That's right.
I try when that question comes out to go right to like the meat of that question. So like, Where does the baby come out? I would say the mom has a hole between her legs and that's where the baby comes out. Does it hurt? Yeah, it kind of does. Okay. That's usually the end of it. Like that's the beginning of it, you know, and I try to go to the meat of it rather than like, oh, well, you know, here's the sort of secondary answer and go and like really answer the question, but not get into like, and they're used because there's, you know, what's a condom? Okay. A condom is something that goes over the penis to hold the sperm in. That's what a condom is.
Right.
But not like, and they're used because there's diseases and there's it. Like, don't go way down the pathway. Like, just answer the question asked.
Right. And even if your answer confuses them and they're sort of nodding with a furrowed brow, like, that's okay. Right. Because this isn't, you're not doing this once. That's sort of right. The biggest thing I learned working on this. Right. I'm not doing this once. Dr. John Sherry, who's a parenting expert in Dublin, Ireland, he says that if, you know, sometimes it comes up that your kid asks where babies come from, like in the middle of a family dinner with Aunt Bertha, or I don't know, like at church, inappropriate moments can occur.
Right.
And it's okay, of course, to sort of punt in those moments. But he says, find a moment to get back to them, raise the subject. They've given you an opening and you say, remember you asked me the other day about how babies were made, that's an important thing to talk about. Can we talk about that now? Like, just as you said, don't punt and then pretend you forgot that they asked.
Yeah. I tend in that situation when I punt to not come back to it, I have to admit. And that happens with like all sorts of different topics, you know, like I had a kid in the car the other day ask about 9/11 while I had little kids in the car. And I was like, we have to talk about that later. Like, I'm not getting into that in the car right now with little kids. And then I was like, it didn't come up again. And I was like, I'll wait till that gets raised
that
later on.
That is the perfect parallel. And if you don't live on the East Coast or in or around New York City, like the two of us do, people might not get it as much, but you have to explain that to your kids very carefully and in stages. And I've done that with my kids who are all born, obviously, after it happened. It's completely hypothetical to them, but more real than it is to a kid who doesn't live in New York City, like that this thing happened. That's not what this episode is about. But yeah, I've had exactly the same experience, that's an ongoing conversation and you explain it to a 12-year-old and a 5-year-old very, very differently.
Right. And you kind of explain it in pieces and parts and you explain it at an appropriate time. So if the subject comes up and there's, you know, kids of different ages around or for any reason, kids you're not, don't think are ready for the information, like you explain it correctly for the age in the right time. That's the parallel.
I kind of realized working on this episode too, that I do have like, I got to go back, that older teens, I was reading about what, when, and the Center for Women's Health said, you know, you can wait until your teen is 14 to 16 years old to start talking about sexually transmitted disease, contraception, abortion. You can wait on those topics. And I have, but that was also a reminder.
But how long exactly can you wait? You don't want to wait until it becomes a practical conversation.
It was, right, exactly. You need that to be a hypothetical discussion. So advocatesforyouth.org, which is an association that promotes and talks about good sexual education for kids, they did a study that showed that talking to teenagers about condoms before they ever have to use one significantly improves the chances that they will use one.
Yeah.
So the time,
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. The time to talk about it is before they need to make that decision, not during and not after. And I need
to
do
that.
Well,
and then the trick is that people are like, but wait a minute, I don't want my 14, 15, 16 year old to use a condom. Like, right. I don't want to introduce that information and make it seem like it's something that I condone.
I know.
That's where I go back to, like, you have to discuss this. You have to wrap your values up in these conversations. You know, I mean, they've done a billion studies that abstinence only education does not really work. You know, like the idea of like, if you don't have any information, you won't do this. It's a fallacy that we all kind of cling to because we don't want to have the conversation.
Right. So you're right.
But
yeah.
If you have to talk about all pieces and parts of this, you can't just like let yourself off the hook and try to skate.
I think you're right. Like if abstinence until marriage is your family's value, then that's your value. But then talk about that. Don't just talk about the difficulties around that. Talk about the
what that really means, right? That doesn't get you off the hook. It doesn't mean you skate. The other funny part is that the older teenagers, it's like you can wait until they're, you know, in high school to talk about sexually transmitted diseases. I've been in a committed relationship for the last 24 years. Like I have to go, I'm going to have to like find a seminar. I don't know. Is there a webinar?
There's an app for that, Amy. I'm sure.
There is an app for that.
But you don't want your husband to catch you Googling what sexually transmitted diseases
like,
are there.
Oh, I am so not up on what the kids are doing today.
I don't think they changed that much. I mean, I think there's probably pretty much the standard. I don't think there's been a whole lot of new stuff since we got married.
I hope not, but I mean, I wouldn't know.
14 years longer than me, 13 years longer than me. So, but I don't know. I don't think that's changing all that fast.
I hope not.
And the general idea is still the same. So I have something that I want to introduce into this conversation as the thing, the key to it all, I think. And I'm going to talk to you about it after this break.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting Podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
And now, the 6 types of moms explaining the birds and the bees from the What Fresh Hell podcast. The playing it cool mom.
Listen, guys, this is no big deal. It's something everyone does. I'm sure you've heard lots of things at school, but we're just going to talk it out, okay? No pressure, no weirdness, just a chat ski with the old momstress. Nice and easy.
The I'm not going to make this awkward, awkward mom.
I know this seems really awkward. Oh my God, when my mom talked to me about this stuff, it was so incredibly awkward. I'm not going to make this awkward. Should we sit? Because standing feels awkward. Okay, I think we may be sitting too close. That also feels awkward, and I do not want this to be awkward.
The let's lighten this up, mom.
The old bird and the bees. You know when a bee mates, don't you? When she finds her honey, get it? Well, it's time to talk about the birds and the bees. Buzz, buzz, and flap, flap. Am I right? I mean, could this be any weirder, talking to your mom about this stuff? Cringe. Am I right?
The professorial mom.
Gather round, children. I have a PowerPoint presentation that I will begin once everyone is seated and the giggling has completely ceased. When you are ready, we will begin with the urethral orifice before moving on to the glans majoris.
The having trouble getting started, mom.
So, I wanted to talk to you about something.
what's the word? It's sensitive, but it's not bad sensitive. In fact, it can be a wonderful thing. I mean, really one of the most wonderful experiences there is. But this experience should not be undertaken lightly. I mean, it's special in a very specific way that I want to talk to you about because it's so important and private. It is also private, but not in a bad way. Okay, wait, where was I?
The let's just get this over with mom.
Okay, so mom and dad, they love each other very much. The penis goes in the vagina, sperm, egg, bada boom, bada bing. 9 months later, hey, look, a baby. And we're out of this. If you have any questions, your father will be home in an hour.
This has been 6 types of moms explaining the birds and the bees from the What Fresh Hell podcast. Amy, are you ready for my insight?
It's the key to everything?
The key to everything.
Okay, go ahead.
It's the family dinner.
Oh.
And if you can't do family dinner because your kids are in sports or whatever else, it's the conversational family time. If that means you don't have screens in the car because that's your opportunity for conversational family time. Conversational family time is when a lot of these conversations and values come up. I'm not saying every single night over the roast beef, you're like, this is how you put a condom on. Like, that's not what's going on. But it facilitates an ongoing conversation about what's happening. And in those conversations, these things naturally come up and you can address them and talk about them. At our family conversation, it's like things going on at school or things they might have read or things they might have heard people say or someone called someone a this. What does that mean? Well, that's a rude term for someone who is this what? Like, whatever it is, you're getting into values conversations around this stuff by having constant conversations with your kids as a family.
That sounds hard to me with teenagers. And I guess it does sort of re-highlight for me, like, start it young, start it. We're not ashamed to talk about what's a lesbian at the dinner table, right? When they're 10, not that I'd be embarrassed to talk about that, but I'm trying to think about the questions my teenagers would have for me now, which don't feel like dinner conversation, but maybe they should.
No, and I want to be clear that, like, they're not at the dinner table being like, what age is it appropriate for me to start having sex? Like, that's not what's happening. But around my family dinner table, we talked a lot about, like, things happening in the news, Bill Clinton,
oh,
you know, like,
yeah.
Is it inappropriate to have a relationship with someone at work? You know, like, we were talking about, especially with Bill Clinton, pretty specific stuff around the dinner table, you know, like, what constitutes sex? What does it mean? Those kind of conversations. I mean, I was in college when that whole thing went down, but I just mean, in general, we talked about, like, someone from school is pregnant. You know, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. What are the challenges of that? Like, the family conversation is not going to be where you have the specific talk about the birds and the bees, but it does start to come up. Like, I'm trying to think of a very specific example, but we recently had a conversation at our dinner table, and it was some joke that boys were making at school. And I was like, what do you think they're talking about there? And my kids were like, is it sex? And I was like, yeah, I think that's what they're talking about. That's what they're joking about, you know? And that's the answerable parent to me. It's like, you're all sitting around the table and you're having discussions about the world, and that world includes sex.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But you're not in those conversations going to be like, the penis goes into the vagina. That's not what you're talking about over the roast beef. Like, those conversations are separate conversations. But I think a lot of the values conversations, that person doesn't seem to treat their girlfriend very nicely. I don't like the way he treats her. Those kind of conversations are happening. I mean, we talk about friends, like, oh, that friend doesn't seem like he was being a really good friend to that other person, you know? Why do the boys, like, chase the girls around? How does that make the girls feel? Is it a game? Do they like it? Like, those kind of conversations are part of all of this stuff, and they need to be happening at the dinner table.
So can we talk a little bit about the difference between having this conversation with boys and with girls and with mothers and with fathers? Because I thought this
yes.
was, so Advocates for Youth did a study that found that mothers are more likely to do this work than fathers. At least that's what their kids report, which kind of didn't surprise
Shocker.
Me. Right. But the most common conversation is mother-daughter. The second
okay.
most common is mother-son,
The third most common combination to have such these sort of conversations is father son, and in a, you know, distant fourth, father daughter. That's the least likely combination for these things to occur. And that makes sense to me because, of course, when you're talking to daughters, you're talking about menstruation and all kinds of—
I was going
to
say,
right?
Daughters have a very practical thing that comes up here with the period.
Yes.
So like that is part of sex ed and it's part of sexuality and it happens earlier and earlier and you got to talk about it.
Yes. It's a very, very different set of conversations you have to have with your girl and talking about bodily autonomy and also like, please God, don't get pregnant. And, you know, there's different things and trying to be—
Or not please God. Here's how to not get pregnant. Right. God, please God, maybe shouldn't play too big a role in this.
Not too big a role. And you know, a menstruation was just not something that was discussed with among anybody growing up. I mean, even when I was the fifth grader on the fire escape, that was something that was like—
That was taboo.
I only knew a little bit about that. Like even Judy Blume didn't really talk about it too much and it was still pretty mysterious.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Right. And I had to learn, you know, I had to learn how to use a tampon when I was 18 years old from another 18-year-old, like through a bathroom door. And so I'm trying that we are not there yet, but I have a daughter. And so I'm trying in the same way to be the askable parent around this. Like, oh yeah, this is something you're gonna have to put up with. And like, it's not awesome, but it's really not that big a deal. And you know, this is what you do. And I'll show you how to do it when the time comes. And we're just not gonna worry about it. And trying to be— because I don't really buy into the whole like, and you're a woman now, and this is the most wonderful thing that will ever happen. I mean, it's not true. So why would I sell it that way?
Well, it's also, there's no way to play it. Like that's really tarred to tingles. Being too frank about it is really gross. Like there's no way to do it right. Just like, it's going to be awkward. Just like let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's okay to come at it with like, oh, this is like something like, you got to deal with. But the funny thing is like, it isn't something that comes up often in my marriage. I don't spend a lot of time talking to my husband about menstrual health, right? So of course he's not going to talk to his daughter about it. But I think this is a little bit.
Certain things take one for the team. I mean, don't make your husband talk about menstruation. He doesn't want to do that. This is another area where I think my kids have health class where this is discussed. I think it's sixth grade. And I know people have different opinions about this, but I'm all for health class. I like the idea that someone else brings up a lot of the nitty gritty of this stuff. And then I'm there to like, just be the catcher who answers questions.
Yes. Oh, phew. Thank you.
Like that's a great model for me. Like I know people and they opt out and they don't want strangers discussing this with their kids. I'm all for that. I'm like, learn about it in school. Like you learn about every other factual thing in school. That's what this is, just a factual thing. And then come home and I'll field any questions you've got. I like that model a lot. I'm all for it.
There are some good resources out there that can help. Like, for me, that does feel more comfortable. Like Lola, which actually sponsored one of our episodes. They are not sponsoring this episode, so I'm bringing this up just because I liked it. They have something called Lola's Personal, Honest, Real-Life Guide to Your First Period. And I'll put the link up on our show page. It is so good, and I look forward to using it when the time comes, not as a substitute for my talking to my kid, but as a jumping off point to talking to my kid about, this is what it's like. This is exactly what to expect. Like, I wish I had this thing when I was, you know, a seventh, eighth grader. And there are a lot of other good resources too. And like I said, they're not a substitute for honest conversation, but they're a really useful jumping off point. Let's look at this together. You know, why don't you look at this chapter and then let's talk about what questions you might have and come at it with what questions do you have instead of do you have any questions?
Right. And this was so awkward for us dealing with our parents, and it will be awkward for us dealing with our kids. Like, I feel like people feel like we're these new, cool, hey, Intuit parents, and it's not going to be awkward. It's going to be super awkward.
Right.
It's awkward.
Right.
You're not going to skip the part where it's awkward.
Right. And pretending it's not is useless. And I think saying it's awkward is okay. Clearly they're mortified, and the older they get, the more mortified they get. A five-year-old can ask a really innocent question because they don't know it's not innocent. And so it gets a little harder as they get older, not easier, because it's so hypothetical when they're kids.
Right.
So I guess, if I can offer anything from the mom with older kids vantage point, it's like, start young, because believe it or not, it gets more awkward to have these conversations, if also more important.
And take the opportunities. Like someone was making a joke on some cartoon my kids were watching, and they were like, that's puberty. And they're like, what's puberty? And I'm like, oh, okay, good. You're going to grow hair here, here, and here, and your voice is going to change. And it's because, you know, like I try to lean in a little bit when the questions do come up. Again, not over answering, but introduce early and often this information. That's the key to me. You don't want to just suddenly have this, like, you never discuss it. And then we talk a lot about, like, if you're not letting your, like, four-year-old have a little bit of freedom, you're not going to let your college kid have freedom. Like, you're going to be that mom sitting next to him in the lecture hall. You know, like, you got to practice this stuff early, seed it in, put the seeds in. So, like, when my six-year-old doesn't get the puberty joke, I'm like, well, puberty is when your body changes from a child to an adult. And one of the ways that happens is you grow hair. And one of the ways is that you get a period. What's a period? Well, I'll explain, you know, like just the facts. But when I find an opportunity to discuss, I lean in.
All right. I think you're right. And it's what we have to do. You got to be the askable parent. What are our takeaways? Askable parent is great. And you're doing that by leaning in when the opportunity comes up to discuss about stuff. Understand that this is an ongoing conversation that we're going to be having 100 times, not once. If we're lucky, if we're doing it the way we're supposed to be doing it.
Don't be afraid to insert values into this conversation. It doesn't have to be simply technical.
Yeah.
You can say, like, our values are that you act this way in sexual relationships, and that's what our values are. Like, again, my mom always said, you put the parameters tighter, understanding that kids may want to go out of them a little bit. Like, it's okay to have values around this, and it's okay to present those values.
And that makes it a bigger tent, which makes it also easier to have the conversation, right? If you're including in this that consent and values and loving relationships and sexual orientation and all this stuff is under the big tent of important things that we have to talk about sometimes, it's a little bit easier to conceive of, at least for me, than, okay, this is where we go talk about the biology that will blow your mind. One of my kids, when I explained the facts of life, I won't say which one, this child looked at me and said, no, that's a mistake.
Said, yeah.
No, it's not. No. You just said them. Like, nope. I know what I said.
I had a friend who explained this to their kid, and then he saw the neighbors, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and he's like, I can picture Mr. Smith doing that, but not Mrs. Smith.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, kids are funny, but it's like, have the conversations and let the questions flow. Answer only the question that you were asked. Try not to do the Amy where you're like, okay, you asked A and suddenly we're at Z,
right,
and your head is exploding.
Right.
But it's got to be ongoing, and it's going to, listen, your other option is Amy Wilson on the fire escape. Whenever you try to shy away from this, picture little Amy Wilson like chewing her gum on the fire escape and explaining the facts of life to your kid, and you're going to be like scared straight.
So wrong. Scared straight. It feels counterintuitive, but talking to them about this stuff keeps them safer, keeps them protected, and helps them have better practices around this stuff when they do start. So,
because the fact of the matter is they're hearing about it from someone.
That's true.
Your only choice is who that person is. Is it their friend on the playground, or is it you?
Is it your Lululemon shopping bag, or is it you?
I hope we've learned a lesson about shopping at Lululemon. All right, guys, that is the birds and the bees from the What Fresh Hell podcast. We want you to come join the conversation on our Facebook page at What Fresh Hell Cast.
We're also on Instagram at What Fresh Hell Cast and on Twitter at WFH Podcast. Oh, and the show page, as always, I'll put all the links. There's some really interesting links and studies and useful resources that I'll put up on whatfreshhellpodcast.com.
Guys, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working, and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talk to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.